are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide.
7 years in, you know, I just turned 30. I was looking for that next change and I became a bit jaded with teaching. And I know that that's something that we still look at today amongst young teachers.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
For this week's podcast, I chatted to Andy Milne, a British PE teacher currently living and teaching in Chicago. Andy's positivity and love for teaching jumps out of this interview from the first moment, so you'll be surprised to hear that he actually quit teaching after 7 years. Listen on to find out what made him come back and listen to him speak really passionately about how we can encourage more teachers back to the profession and start to improve the education system for every child. Okay, so this is Holly, editor at Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. And today I'm talking to Andrew Milne. Hi, Andrew. Can you introduce yourselves to our listeners and tell them what you do?
Yeah, hi, Holly.
Hi.
So, I'm Andy Milne, originally from London, England, and had quite a successful career back home, but then relocated to America to start all over again. And I now find myself teaching health and PE in a wonderful school in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. So 23 years into my career, I'm still as kind of energetic and vibrant about my career as I was, I guess, on day one.
That's great. And actually, I'm talking to Andy virtually, which I'm very lucky to be able to do that, to be able to connect with him. So whereabouts exactly are you, Andy?
So I'm the northwest suburbs of Chicago. I tell people back home I'm Chicago, but then that portrays pictures of an urban environment. And I guess Chicago often in the news back home is to do with gang violence and shootings. And I'm not in that part. I'm in a bubble out in a very affluent area by Lake Michigan. I'm a block walk away from a small beach. So I have been known to walk my students for a mindfulness activity to the beach, have 20 minutes there and back again. I'm 45 minutes away from the city.
Great. Oh, wow. That sounds lovely, being able to just pop off to the beach. Very good. Very good for the mind. So can you talk us through your career and what led you to your teaching position now?
I think like most of the guests that you've had on the podcast in the past, strong role models and strong teachers at school definitely shaped me. I went to a very academic grammar school in North London. But I was very sporty, and I think that made me slightly different. And lots of the teachers didn't really know how to cope with a kid who really wanted to follow a career or a progression into college that was sport focused. But there was a PE teacher that I had a strong relationship with, who really I spent a lot of time with, and he modeled me. And there was much of his teaching style that I guess once I became a teacher, I did embrace before I then found my own style. But there was also a young history teacher as well, who was very good at building relationships with students. And he was very familiar with the kids. He was younger. And I think that there was a warmth that he displayed that made me think that there was something to this, you know, spending time with kids that progressed into coaching, spending time coaching, working summer camps. And because I was strong at sports, it made sense to go to college and then continue playing sport, which then led down the path of becoming a PE teacher. And although I never realized that I wanted to become a teacher, it was once I hit the school and then was surrounded by students on a daily basis that I realized that teaching really was for me. So it was tiny school in London, underperforming, only 850 students. Within a year, I knew everybody. Within a second year, I knew who was related to who. By the third year, that novelty had worn off. And through basketball, I'd actually met Vic Goddard, who I know will be familiar to many of your listeners, and he became a mentor to me, encouraged me to apply for a position at his school, slightly bigger. And 7 years in, you know, I just turned 30. I was looking for that next change, and I became a bit jaded with teaching. And I know that that's something that we still look at today amongst young teachers. I know we throw the figure of maybe 5 years, you know, is when we see the most attrition, but it was 7 years for me. And I was seeing young teachers being treated unfairly. I felt like older teachers got all the perks, got to choose the easiest classes to teach, and the youngsters got more and more things just thrown at them. And at the same time, as a young teacher in your early 30s, trying to find a house, you know, and trying to set roots, it was a very expensive time. So I saw teachers leaving, and relocating away from London. And I just felt like at that time I needed to walk away. And it has definitely shaped me. I went into recruitment for 2 years where I chased money. And although that the financial reward was better than it was, obviously, as a teacher, there was no emotional reward. And it was very evident early on that I was missing kids. I missed the emotional reward that you get with students. And people I worked alongside would say, well, you've placed somebody and you've made a bonus. Why aren't you happy? And I said, well, if you've taught a kid with no hands to swim and you've taught a blind kid to head or a soccer ball, you've no idea what I've been through. So I returned to teaching and I'm glad I did. I ended up in a wonderful, prestigious boys school in Dulwich in London. And I'd have stayed there for the rest of my life. But I bumped into a wonderful girl from America in a bar. And one thing led to another. And having had the experience of walking away from teaching and coming back and still being successful, I think it empowered me to just take another risk. And yeah. Moved to Chicago to start all over again. Yeah. And three schools in, I find myself now in an amazing school, very well privileged, surrounded by outstanding, outstanding teachers. I couldn't want for anything else. And I've been very successful.
Oh, it's so great to hear, because obviously we hear so many stories of teachers having to leave teaching because of the pressure. And it's nice to hear you saying you did do that, but then, you were driven back for the reasons that I think most teachers say that they want to be in teaching, which is kind of the working with the kids and the satisfaction they get from that. So it's nice to hear a really positive message. Yeah. What tip would you give perhaps to a teacher who is thinking of leaving teaching?
That's a tough one, because I guess you've had to convince your parents that you want to go to college and this is right for you, and you've convinced your friends and then you've convinced yourself that this is the career. So there's a lot at stake if you finally get there and you realize that maybe this is tougher than you thought. I would say that teaching is all about relationships. And if you can surround yourself with strong relationships, I think it's easier to deal with some of the trials and tribulations of the workload and the hours and juggling, your friends and family and personal life as well. You have to find a strong mentor. And I was fortunate enough to do that early on in my career. And now I offer to mentor young teachers as well. I love working with future professionals and kids coming into the profession for the first time, because you need to know that there needs to be people out there that you can talk to and talk to other teachers going through the same situation as yourself. I mean, if you can find other young teachers with 4 or 5 years experience and share those stories, and I guess your blog is a really good opportunity to hear from other teachers as well. But then I've been fortunate, and I know that walking away worked for me. And when I did return back to the classroom, I did feel energized. I had 7 years of experience under my belt, but I was re-energized and came back in with the bright eyes and bushy tails of a newly qualified teacher. So there's no shame in walking away from teaching if you feel that that's the right move for you right now. I mean, I guess the biggest relationship you have is with yourself. And you have to look after yourself. And if you're tired and you're stressed and you're overworked and you find yourself not coping, you've got to look after yourself. You're not a productive teacher and you'll burn out. Mm. But know that, like me, you can return. And I know that there's such a glut of teachers out there in the UK who have walked away from teaching, but that doesn't mean they can't come back. And maybe the government needs to work out what's the best way to bring them back. Is it reduced workload? Is it an increased salary? I probably would lean towards the salary.
I think you're right. I think it's a really great perspective to look at it at, with how can we stop teachers leaving teaching? Well, that's very difficult, but actually, how can we encourage teachers to come back to teaching? Maybe that's a new perspective we should be looking at. So now you teach in the US. What would you say is the key difference to education in the US compared to the UK?
It's funny because I get asked that a lot, especially by my pupils, by my students. I'll say that the similarity is that kids are kids and they deserve and they want good teachers in their lives. They want adults who the students know that they care about them. So that's the key similarity. I think wherever you go, kids deserve great teachers. My experience is very different. I work in, like I said, a very affluent school. So my perspective on teaching is shaped by the wealth that I'm surrounded by and the state that I'm in. Three biggest differences. One would be the size of the school. My school has 4,000 kids over two campuses, and they're aged 15 to 18. So that's a high school. So that's significantly bigger than anything I was in back home. My PE department has 36 teachers.
Wow.
So I've got 35 others I can bounce ideas off of. So there's my support structure right there. Secondly, Illinois as a state, its funding for education is the worst in the country. And it's so unfair. Schools are funded by property taxes. So if you live in my school district, the houses are $1 million plus. Mm-hmm. So wealthy schools have more money, which means they can recruit and retain better teachers. The salary structure is shaped by the school district, not by the government. So if you want to recruit teachers, you can increase the salary if that's possible. So where I am, if you're in a high poverty area, this is mostly non-white students, you get less funding. So the advantage get more advantages. It's very, very unfair. I think the third one would be curriculum. Mm-hmm. The curriculum is different. Mm-hmm. With my PE teacher head on, all kids have to have daily PE in order to graduate. So I see my students every day, right through until they're 18. Mm-hmm. So PE is a daily requirement. And we also have less emphasis on standardized testing. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's a real big issue that you're dealing with back home. The only real standardized tests are the ACT and the SAT that students would take in order to go on to college. Mm-hmm. So other than that, I, as a teacher, I get to choose the assessments. I get to choose the grades. And really that just helps me ascertain where their next step is next year and maybe if we're doing any kind of streaming. But it does mean that a B grade student at my school might not be a B elsewhere. There might be an A somewhere else. So there is less focus on the pressures of standardized testing. Mm-hmm. And then with my seniors who are now applying to college, to university, they'll know where they're going early on in the new year. So with no A levels to look forward to and already having a college place lined up, it's difficult to motivate your 18-year-olds in March, April, May, and June because they already know what they're doing and where they're going. So it is different.
That's really different, yeah.
But it's great, yeah. At the same time.
Yeah. And do you think that the teachers in your school face similar workload challenges to the UK?
I'm going to say yes. For me, I don't feel the workload pressures, but that's 23 years in, and I've got all these strategies now that make sure that this doesn't sound healthy, but I use all of my free time at school to prepare lessons or do grading. I eat my lunch at my desk, and I know that's a terrible thing to do, and I would never have done that as a young teacher. But now that I'm older and I've got a young family, I don't want to bring work home. And also, your perspective changes because now – I mean, today I don't have school, but I'm recording a podcast and I'm going to spend 90 minutes grading. And then when I read for pleasure, really it's a book that relates to my subject area anyway. But yes, and certainly some teachers, I see English teachers walking around with a stack of marking. And my wife's a biology teacher and she's always doing her grading as well. So the workload is there. But I mean, as teachers, unfortunately, sometimes we just take that upon ourselves and we go a little bit further and we work a little bit harder. And I could roll the ball out. I could just play dodgeball and I'd probably get away with it. But I wouldn't feel happy and my kids would have a terrible experience. So, yeah, workload is still here.
Yeah. What's the one thing you would like to see change in education?
I would change the funding here. I think funding should be full and fair and quality teachers should be retained. And struggling teachers will be fully supported. But I want to add that, and this echoes something that one of your previous guests said, I think schools should reflect the community and serve the needs of the community. I think my black and brown kids should see black and brown teachers. I think that's not necessarily the case, certainly where I am. And I would love to see personalized curriculum that reflects the needs. If your students and the community doesn't want to keep sending people to university and college because they need tradesmen and they need electricians and builders and people to work on their cars, then do that. There's no shame in your students not wanting and aspiring to go to university. You just want to give them the skills that allow them to be successful. Mm-hmm. And again, that echoes what somebody else said on your podcast as well. Eventually it's going to be, what can you do? What can you do that makes you employable? Not what do you know and what can you regurgitate?
Yeah, I really agree. Okay, finally, we're going to finish then with our quick fire round. What project are you currently working on?
I have a project called sendateacher.com. Mm-hmm. My school sends me to conferences all across the country and they fully support me. They give me time, they give me money to go. but I know that that's not the same. And all teachers need professional development that suits their needs. So I actually sell merchandise that's for PE and health teachers, and 100% of the profits go towards sending teachers to our national convention. Mm-hmm. So we sent two teachers from public schools to our convention in Boston. We did the same in Nashville. And our next conference coming up is in Tampa in Florida in April. And I hope to send three young teachers to the convention who typically wouldn't be able to go because they didn't have any funding supports.
That's brilliant. That's great. What kind of things do you sell?
It's T-shirts and hoodies and three-quarter zips. It's just clothing that they can wear here. I know back home, PE teachers tend to wear collared shirts with a little school crest. And I love that look. That's very English. And I still wear that here.
So what book are you currently reading?
I rediscovered my love of reading, and right now I'm reading an outstanding book called White Fragility. It's by Robin DiAngelo, and it's a really good book about having productive conversations with people about prejudice and structural racism. I think it would be a great book for teachers to read if they want to make change personally and within their school community as well. If you're having conversations with your kids about race and privilege, this is a really, 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 I can't stress that enough, a great read.
Oh, that's great. Can you just repeat the name, the title and the author again?
Yeah, it's White Fragility, and the author is Robin DiAngelo.
That's great. Great recommendation. Okay, and then who would you recommend I interview next and why?
I'm going to be really selfish here. Last summer, Ross interviewed Tom Rogers and a group of teachers, and he gave them questions about, there were 10 provocations about education. Mm-hmm. One of the guests on there was a guy called Darren, and they didn't say who his last name was, and he tweets as Keys School. And as he was responding to Ross's questions, I thought, ooh, this is someone I really want to know more about. Yeah. And he's not very active on social media. So if you can get Darren back in, I want to hear from Darren.
Ah, that's great. Okay, we'll track him down. Good recommendation. Great. Okay, so can you also tell our listeners where they can find out more about you?
Yes, I'm huge on Twitter. I spend a lot of time on Twitter, and I tweet as Carmel Health, Carmel Health, Carmel Health. That was the first school that gave me my break in America, so I keep that as my Twitter account. I also have a blog that's for health teachers, and it's slowchathealth.com. Mm-hmm. And finally, if you want to check out senderteacher.com and see some of the merchandise I sell to raise money for teachers, you can find me there as well.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thanks so much for talking to me today, Andy.
Thank you very much, Holly.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.